This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Om Sai Ram to our listeners. So this is the final part on the topic of faith. And this was a talk given by Prem. So let's hear the final part. Saram to you all.
It should actually be artha, arthati, jignasu and bhakti, bhakta. Right? When you say that the fourth one is the purest form of devotion, the Swami says the fourth is a jnani. Because the jnani is one who understands that the present is perfect. The knowledge that right now, whatever I'm going through, be it an up, be it a down, be it darkness, be it light, whatever I am right now going through is perfect, because whatever Swami chooses for me is perfect, is best for me, right? I think that is the idea which we all have to get to. And if you really, we're all participating in all of these sessions, we're coming for bhajans, I'm here in Parthi, we all claim to be devotees. So whatever be our other profession, whatever be our other things that we are occupying ourselves with, when we come before Swami as a devotee, I think it becomes mandatory that we grow in devotion. We become better devotees. As that devotee asked, our goal should be to become an ideal devotee, right? And that comes with this complete understanding. And as I said, when Swami was physically interacting, Swami gave us these examples of people who actually shined as such devotees. There's this very popular story, I'm sure most of you might be knowing about this devotee and about this incident. It's a very popular incident. There is this devotee by name Rama Brahma, right? He's a caretaker of the Vrindavan Ashram. Phenomenal devotee. Whoever has known him have no words but words of praise for the kind of devotion and love and surrender that he had. There is this beautiful episode, as I said, many of you may be aware of it. His son was going to get married in Vrindavan, right? So the family of the girl that was going to get married to him had traveled all the way from his native place to Vrindavan. Swami had accommodated all of them. Swami had promised, I think, to perform the marriage. Everything was set, you know. You can imagine a whole marriage party coming all the way. And they're all excited about this. All of a sudden, one evening, Swami calls Rama Brahmam. I think the next day or the day after that was supposed to be the marriage. Swami calls this devotee Rama Brahmangaru and says, go and tell the girl's family that the marriage is called off, that I don't want the marriage to happen. And this devotee does not even ask Swami why. You know, he doesn't even say, Swami, what explanation I'm going to give. Swami tells this to him. He says, okay, Swami. He walks straight to those people. He goes to them and says, the marriage is not happening. We have called off the marriage. You can imagine the anger and the resentment which he would have faced from that side. They were so upset with him. They were angry. They were like, you know, they were using foul language against him and against Swami. And they were so upset. And they began packing the things and they were about to leave the next day. And what happens the next day, Ram Brahmam Garu's son, who was supposed to get married, the marriage was for him, a snake bites him and he passes away. Right? The boy who was supposed to get married. And you can imagine the relief that that family would have felt. Then the family of the girl, they come and literally fall at Ram Brahmam Garu's feet and says, you know, what a great disaster you have saved us from. What a great disaster Swami has saved us from. Imagine if the marriage had happened, the girl would have become a widow overnight. And, you know, we are talking about different times, right? People don't take these things lightly. They will say that inauspiciousness, you know, inauspicious person. And they said, what a great grand disaster you have saved us from. But imagine the devotion of this devotee who did not even question Swami. He said, Swami, if you tell me something, it must be for my good. It's very easy for me to, you know, when you narrate this incident, okay, so this is why Swami said that. But there are 100 questions that can be asked. Why didn't Swami stop the snake from biting that innocent boy? Why didn't Swami save his life? Or why didn't Swami do that? Or why didn't Swami postpone the wedding? Or, you know, there could be 100 questions. But the devotee never asked the question, right? And that's what qualified him as that devotee. If you tell me something, I know it is right for me and I do it. So this is the tool that Swami gives. Devotion is, we have to get there where there are ups and downs seem equal to me. How do we manage with that? Because the mind does feel ups and downs. So Swami says, whatever happens to you is good for you, is a tool. But maybe I'll just extend it a little more than that. See, when I tell this to Swami, that Swami, whatever you do in my life is good for me, it is almost like I'm telling Swami, Swami, I accept whatever you do to me because it is good for me. Right? Even then, there is this idea of what is good for me and what is bad for me in my mind. And I'm telling Swami that whatever you do is acceptable because it is good for me. I think the real devotion is when we step it ahead, when we say, Swami, whatever you do for me is acceptable, period. I don't care in what way it is good for me, in what way it is bad for me, in what way it is going to help me grow. Right? That's what Rama Brahmam did. There is no question of reasoning. How is this good for me? And how is this going to work out? Is this going to change? Whatever you give me is acceptable for me. You know, when we sit in Mandir, we all have our favorite sweets, right? We all have, I like Moti Chor Laddu, I like this. And sometimes being students, we are bugged of a certain sweet which keeps coming, repeating too often. And you say, oh, let's hope it's not that sweet this time. But nevertheless, whatever is the sweet, we'll eat it. Why? Because it is prasadam. And what is prasadam is always acceptable. The moment something becomes prasadam, what I like, what I don't like, actually does not matter. Right? In our tradition, that's why we have all kinds of prasadams. You know, when you have Ugadi, they give you a prasadam which is bitter, which is probably not something that you always relish. But we accept it because it comes with a tag, prasadam. And Swami says that is the nature that a devotee has to develop. In fact, in the Upanishads, this is referred to as Ishvara Prasada Buddhi. Ishvara Prasada Buddhi means the understanding, the intelligence to accept whatever happens in one's life as a prasadam from the Lord. We must all picture this. You know, imagine Swami standing at the gateway of your life. Whatever comes into my life, the worst person, the worst trouble, it has come to my presence after taking Swami's approval. It cannot come before me if Swami has not approved it. And whatever Swami approves is acceptable to me. When we come to that attitude, right? And this can come only with practice, right? As Swami would say, this has got to be practiced. Anything, and as Krishna tells, you know, Abhyasena tu Kaunteya, he says only with practice it comes. The mind is difficult to deal with. You have to practice. And how do you practice? Swami would say, if you want to learn swimming, you have to jump into the pool. If you want to master the art of moving around in the dark, you have to have darkness around you. Isn't it? So the only way we can develop faith is when we are put in situations where faith is required. There is this very beautiful dialogue. Some of you must have seen this movie. It's a very famous Hollywood movie. If I'm not wrong, it's Ivan Almighty, right? Where Morgan Freeman comes as God. There is this very beautiful dialogue that he gives there. We quote it in all our radio satsangs. Many times we've quoted this. He says, I've just got that quote here. He says, if someone prays for patience, you think God gives them patience? Or does he give them the opportunity to be patient? If he prayed for courage, does God give him courage? Or does he give him opportunities to be courageous? So when we tell that I want to develop that faith, I want to develop that love, situations like we are in now, we should be grabbing it with both our hands. Right? When we are put in situations where we are doubtful, where we are in the dark, where we are in the midst of negativity, as devotees, we should rejoice at that moment. Ah, here is an opportunity for me to practice surrender. Here is an opportunity for me to practice faith. Here is an opportunity for me to look at a problem and say, you have come to me because Swami has given you to me. You are nothing short of prasadam, right? And this is an opportunity that Swami is giving us all together. And that's why I would often tell, you know, faith is a very abstract concept. How do you define faith? How do you speak of faith? How do you qualify faith? But faith expresses itself as certain emotions. And one of those emotions is fearlessness. Faith is fearlessness, right? And that is why when Swami would raise both his hands and bless us, Swami would call it Abhaya Hasta, right? It's a conferring of Abhaya. It's a conferring of fearlessness. And when Swami is giving us fearlessness, Swami is actually gifting us faith. So at some point, we have to look at Swami and say, Swami, please come and solve all my problems. At some point, we have to look at Swami and say, Swami, give me whatever problem you want, but ensure that I always hold on to you with love. And I accept all of that because it has come to you from me. Right? So I thought these are the thoughts I wanted to share with all of you. Thank you very much for your very patient listening. If there are any questions, I think I'm adventurous enough to try to field them.
Prem, there are certain questions. I'll just read it out to you.
Sure.
Is silence equal to devotion? Is it equanimity?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. The thing which Swami says is, you know, there is always in devotion or in the spiritual path, there is always an overlap between tamas and sattva, right? Tamas is when you're fearless, also you look like a devotee. When you're very quiet and you don't want to speak up and you don't want to take any action, that time also you appear like a devotee, right? And that's why that genuineness is the onus is upon us. Swami would say that even about meditation when he speaks. Somebody who's sleeping and somebody who's in deep meditation appear to be the same. But sleep is a sign of tamas. Meditation is a sign of sattva. So you cannot always qualify silence as being that of devotion, but definitely inner silence. Whatever happens around, if you're able to maintain your tranquility, yes, that exactly is what devotion is all about. But it does not mean slackness. It does not mean slothfulness. That becomes tamas. And for most part, nobody can judge that other than yourself. That's why in the spiritual path, you're all by yourself. You have to find out for yourself genuinely where you are. Are you being a devotee or are you being a hypocrite?
Okay. Another question. How do we differentiate between Swami's will or decision and our lack of hard work when we lose a certain opportunity or a task? How to maintain equanimity at that point in time?
I think the various situations differ. Right? Many people ask this question. When there is a deadline, it's actually very easy. Let's say you're doing a 100-meter dash. Your hard work is only till you reach the line, right? So you're happy. There's a clear demarcation to how long you want to hard work. You have to work hard. Once one of the listeners who is doing research asked me this question. How do you know if you've tried hard enough? Right? Because research is something that keeps stretching. There is actually no easy way of knowing that. We often think of surrender as something that comes at the end of effort, right? We have put all the effort and at the end of it, I can lean back and say, Swami, now I surrender to you. But probably surrender is something that has to go hand in hand with effort, right? Every day, you probably never know some tasks that we have to take care of. Like for instance, if you're a parent, if you're taking care of a child, you never know when your duty ends, right? You never know when you've done enough. Probably some efforts are lifelong. That is why this attitude of prasada buddhi, as I said, you know, prasada buddhi is always spoken of as being in conjunction with arpana buddhi. They say Ishwara arpana buddhi and Ishwara prasada buddhi. Whatever you do, whatever task that you do, you make it as an offering to God. And whatever result comes, you accept it as prasadam. But in the process, you know, the practicality is never lost. Let's say I'm a teacher. You know, I go into the class and I teach. Tomorrow, if all my students fail, I can't sit back and say that, okay, Swami, this is your prasadam. You can accept it, but you should go back into your effort and say, is there something else that I can do? Is there some other way I can try to get my lesson across, right? So the practicality remains. You don't give up practicality at all. But at the same time, you use this surrender as a mental cushion for you. You know, you don't get worked up too much. Because at the end of it, there's a very, very beautiful piece which Abraham Lincoln writes. I think it's called the Meditation on the Will, or Meditation on the Divine Will. It is there on Google. If you search for that, you'll find that. Now, we all know Abraham Lincoln's greatest struggle in his life. He was trying to free some of the American states from the grip of slavery, right? They were practicing slavery and he wanted to abolish that. There were some states in the United States, they wanted to retain slavery. So at one point, you know, he kind of loses it. He says, you know, I mean, I'm trying to abolish slavery. I think this is God's work. I'm trying to help people who are poor and who are downtrodden. I think this is God's work. Why is it not happening? I'm taking good, noble work. I'm putting my best and pure intentions into it. I'm working so hard. Why is it not happening? And then he kind of in a meditative state writes down this thing. That's why he calls it the Meditation on Divine Will. He says, if God had willed that this problem should have been solved, it would have been solved. The very fact that it has not been solved is that God wanted this contest between somebody who's trying to do something and somebody who's stopping him. And there is something to gain out of this contest. If there's nothing to gain out of this tug of war, God would not have willed this. So he says, if God had willed the resolution would have happened. If God had willed that it should not happen, it would have not happened. But probably God has willed this tussle, and that's why the tussle continues. It's a very beautiful piece, and actually that's so true with all of us. So surrender is not something that we practice at the end of our effort. Surrender is something that we have to practice even as we are doing our effort. Make it a part of our everyday activity itself. I hope that answers.
So we have another question, Prem. In almost all stories of Swami, including the ones you narrated today, there is always an element of uncertainty and suspense, or rather tension faced by the devotee before the infinite grace comes. Why? There's a part two to this. Why doesn't Swami present the reason while he commands? That way we would have more faith if we know the future shown by Swami.
Swami does both, if you really ask me. There are many, many episodes where Swami clearly explains. There was this devotee who came to Swami as a very, very rich man. Again, a devotee I had the opportunity to speak to. He came as a very rich businessman. And one day Swami actually told him that you're going to lose all your property. Right? Imagine Swami calls him and says, I'm going to make you poor. And then Swami gives him an explanation for that. Swami tells him that Swami explains by giving a certain episode in his life. And Swami says, that was actually the end of this life for you. You were supposed to have died at that point. I gave you an extension of life so that you can have this opportunity to spend your time with Swami. Right? Swami said, I'm giving you an extension of life. But what was supposed to happen is you're supposed to die now and you're supposed to be born in a poor family in the next birth. And Swami said, I am bringing that poverty into this life so that you're able to finish off that karma even when you are going through this opportunity of knowing Swami and having faith in Swami. Right? So I think there are many, many cases like this where Swami does explain why somebody is going through that. But as I said, the ultimate stage where we are supposed to get is we should not need an explanation. We should not have to go and ask Swami, Swami, explain why you're doing this to me. We should be able to look at Swami and say, Swami, if you say it is enough, you say yes or no, it is enough. Right? And in many, many episodes, Swami would say this. There was this one of our lecturers who had finished his master's and he was waiting for Swami to give him the opportunity to work. And in those days, most of the lecturers wanted to be in Prashanthi Nilayam because, you know, Swami was spending a lot of time in Prashanthi Nilayam. The hospitals were coming up and the new the MBA program was coming up. So Swami was spending a lot of time in Prashanthi Nilayam. So everyone wanted to be in Parthi. So there was this teacher who had graduated. Swami calls him inside the interview room. I may be a little fuzzy with my details, but I'll give you the gist of it. So Swami calls him inside the interview room, and Swami very hesitantly, Swami asks him, is it okay if I put you in Vrindavan? If I send you to Vrindavan, is it okay for you? This student looked at Swami and said, Swami, why do you ask? Don't ask, Swami, you just command, you just say, go, I'll go. I will not ask you why and all that. And Swami's face lit up when this boy said this. And Swami, you know, patted him and Swami said, I know you will say this. Swami said, I know this will be your answer. That is why I've already told the VC and I've already printed the application or appointment order, right? But still Swami wanted to hear it from that boy, saying that Swami, you know, I might have 100 reasons. I might want 100 things. That's why I said, if we are still going to hold on to that thing, saying that whatever Swami does is acceptable to me because it is good for me, somewhere the reasoning will come. In what way is this good for me? Is this really good for me? I thought it was good for me. Now it has become bad, right? That is why we should never give scope for that reasoning at all. That's why that there is that beautiful appellation for Lord in the Vedas. Lord is referred to as Aprameya. Aprameya means, Pramana means the way we conceive or perceive objects around us. You know, when I see an object, I have a laptop in front of me, I see it through my eyes, which means this laptop has a shape, it has a color, it has a certain form. Those are all objects which come under the pramanas, the way of knowing them. And the Lord is referred to as an aprameya. No senses, no mind, no intelligence, no intellect can understand God. And that is the fact, right? The beautiful analogy which is often given is, we all are like those salt dolls, which have become very adventurous, and we are telling, I'm going to go and measure this ocean, right? We are standing at the edge of the seashore and saying, I'm going to go and measure the depth of this ocean. But it is a good stupidity to have, because when the salt doll tries to measure the depth of the ocean, it becomes the ocean, right? That's essentially what this path is. In trying to understand Swami, when we start off trying to understand Swami, but somewhere down the line, we realize that there is no point in trying to understand Swami, right? And maybe that is why Swami gives a lot of suspense. Swami gives a lot of this opportunity where you don't wait for Swami to come and tell you. Swami might explain it later, right? But Swami wants that surrender. It's probably an opportunity for us to go and tell Swami that, Swami, you don't have to explain it to me. Whatever you tell me to do, it's acceptable to me, right? And the second point is probably speakers like me pick up episodes which have a little element of surprise and element of suspense in them that makes interesting storytelling also.
So, Prem, moving on, there's one last question I'd like to take. We're just short of time, so I think we'll have to restrict it to that. When we hear the satsang, it's easy to say to practice, but when the situation occurs, we cannot actually keep our faith. It becomes very hard. So please tell us, how can we keep faith in all situations?
There is a very, very standard procedure for that. It is spoken of in all our Upanishads. It is referred to as the process of Shravana, Manana and Nididhyasana. Right? Shravanam is what we are all doing here. Or when you read a book, or when you listen to somebody speaking, when you see a video. Any way in which you take from outside is referred to as Shravana. Manana is the same satsang which happens inside your head, right? That is what it is. And when I made a reference to what Swami says, Bhagavatam Tinandi, Swami said, you must eat Bhagavatam. What that means is, after having eaten it, it has to be constantly contemplated upon. In good times, in bad times, when nothing is going on, right? That is the process that will make it a part of us. And there's this very beautiful analogy which Swami gives. It's a Chinnakatha which Swami would narrate. Only Swami can give us stories like this. There is the story of this boy who is going from one town to the other, right? And in those days, there are no dabas on the way. There are no restaurants that you can stop by and eat. So the mother, what she does is she packs some food for him. And like in the olden days, she packs it up in a cloth, the rotis together, and there's a small pot in which she puts the curry or whatever. And that's a little bit of weight, right? 1.5, 2 kgs or whatever it is. So this boy is walking from this one village to the other. And Swami says at one point he's so tired because it's mid-noon, the sun is beating down, and then he has to carry this lunch and go. So he's getting tired. So Swami says, what does this boy do? He finds a nice shady tree. He sits under it. He eats the food. He digests it. He sits there for some time. And now the burden is gone. And now he's got energy also, right? Swami says double bonus. Now he doesn't have to carry that bundle anymore. And he's also energized. And Swami says, if you keep carrying whatever I tell in my discourses only in your head, it'll only become a burden. So what you carry in your head has to be chewed and has to be assimilated. And that is the process of Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. Right? And much of this does not come naturally. Much of what we do in everyday life never came to us naturally. We were not born with the ability to walk. We were not born with the ability to talk. And that's why Swami would keep on telling, practice, 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 practice. And every time a difficult situation comes in life, Swami says, if you're a good student, I wouldn't claim myself to be a good student in college, but Swami would say, if you're a good student, when they announce an examination, you'll feel very happy, right? Swami will say, oh, examination is coming, because every examination is an opportunity to test yourself and every examination is an opportunity to progress. So Swami would say that when you listen to all of this, yes, it will not come naturally, right? Because Swami would say, it comes like this, it goes like that. That is the natural way it happens. But when it comes into your ear, Swami says, put it through this process of Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. Talk to yourself. Become your own satsang. Become your own good company. Right? And then you will find that eventually it becomes a reflex reaction. Just like anything that we do in life. The moment we all have come to Swami. I came to Swami when I was 17. Now the moment I see somebody in whites, automatically I say Sai Ram. That call for practice, right? That did not come naturally. So Swami says eventually it will come to a point where, as I said, the first thought is anger and upset, and you are upset. No, somebody no less than Tyagaraja was caught up in that. Swami narrates that beautiful incident of at one point Tyagaraja gets completely vexed, and he writes that beautiful kriti where he says, Nalo bhakti leda, nilo shakti leda. He says, do I not have bhakti or do you not have shakti? And then he says, no, I have bhakti, you only don't have shakti. Right? He was so vexed. And then after some time he says, what have I said? No, Rama, forgive me. What I have is very little. What bhakti I have is also your gift. Whatever you give is acceptable to me. So if somebody like Tyagaraja needed a little bit of time to absorb and understand all of this, don't be too hard on yourself. I think we can cheerfully practice it and we all can make it a part of our life.
I think we're running out of time, so I think that was the last question. So on behalf of everyone who's gathered here today, let me take this opportunity to thank you to be with us. For all the participants, you could go to Radio Sai and hear Brother Prem's talks. It's wonderful. He has his reputation of decoding complex subjects and making it simple so that it can be easily digested. And I think no better time to practice faith than the situation in which we are currently in. We are at home, but I think this is a subject which is very close to our heart right now, and everyone is asking the same questions right now. Swami, why this? But I think this is a time when we can actually practice faith every day in our life and let this faith become so strong, like Brother said, let us believe that whatever he is doing, it is for our best. So on behalf of all the devotees, Prem, our heartfelt gratitude to you. Hopefully we get you again back for a session sometime in future.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. Thank you all for the opportunity to think about Swami. It's definitely my pleasure.
We'll end today's session with Om Shanti Shanti and Samasta Loka. Om Shanti 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 Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Jai Bolo Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba Ji Ki. Jai. Thank you, Sai Ram.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.